You're listening to Natural Resources University. This episode features Fins, Fur, and Feathers, hosted by Dr. Joe Gerken and Dr. Drew Ricketts.
Welcome to Fins, Fur, and Feathers, the Fish and Wildlife Management podcast at K-State Research and Extension. I'm Dr. Drew Ricketts.
And I'm Dr. Joe Gerken. We're both lifelong hunters and anglers, K-State Research and Extension specialists, who help citizens with their fish, wildlife, and pond management needs. If you've ever had a wildlife or pond management challenge, then this is the podcast for you.
We address common fish and wildlife management problems using a scientific approach to provide proven and practical solutions to the issues that you may be facing. All right, welcome back to Fins, Fur, and Feathers. Today, I think we're going to have maybe a little bit of back and forth. Joe, you wanted to talk about ethical harvest. That's something we've talked about a few times in, you know, little brief stints, but maybe have a whole episode where we talk about that.
So. Yeah, we kept threatening it a little bit, teasing it a little bit here and there. And I was out during extended antlerless deer hunting season this year, and I'm sure like a lot of our listeners sitting there, and of course that's when you see the biggest bucks of the season, right?
Yeah.
And so I was sitting there, and, you know, this monster buck walked out in the cornfield I was hunting, and it just got me thinking, you know, there's that little angel and devil playing on your shoulders, and of course I would never take that shot, but you know, you start to play through some of those scenarios, and it just got me thinking a little bit about, you know, what is ethical harvest? Why don't we take that shot? Why would it be bad if we did? And then, you know, kind of some of the management scenarios, science behind some of those thinkings as well.
Yeah, well, that's good. I know as I was thinking about all of this and maybe some of the different things I wanted to bring up while we were talking about it, I kept having this little internal battle about, you know, is ethical the right term that we should use for this? Because, you know, all of the different stakeholder groups who are interested in wildlife have different value and belief systems. And so that influences what they may feel is ethical or moral. And so I think I tend to think about this stuff as maybe responsible harvest rather than ethical harvest, because we can maybe be a little bit more objective in what we talk about.
Ethical harvest is a term that social scientists have kind of come up with. That's why I utilize it. I like responsible harvest, though. I think that resonates a little bit better, a little bit more with me personally, too.
Good.
Thinking about, you know, is what I'm doing or the activities that I'm doing responsible for, you know, for now or future generations, future years of hunting and fishing. So, you know, both of those, I think, are good terms. But what is ethics? You know, that's part of that discussion. You could say the same thing, I guess, about responsible, right? Does it matter what you think a year or two or tomorrow? You know, do your thoughts matter at all to being out there? So that's part of the fun of what we're going to talk about today, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So Joe, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think about ethical harvest and or responsible harvest and what that means?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I'm a fisheries biologist, and I'm going out with my extension duties a lot, meeting with private landowners, looking at private ponds. And one of the things that's come up a lot is, you know, people call me and say, I want to stock fish. Okay, and that's immediately what they want to do. And people are really hesitant to keep any fish from their ponds. And a lot of times that leads to issues with overpopulation. Ponds are a closed system, right? And so if you keep adding fish, if they're reproducing and you keep adding more to that pond, eventually you have too many mouths to feed, and that can cause a management concern where the population crashes and you lose all of your fish because there's not enough food for them. So I think starting with, you know, harvest is okay. It's a responsible thing to do a lot of times, as long as we're, you know, following a management plan of some sort that could be statewide, you know, regulated by a big conservation entity in each of your natural resources group. We have Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks that puts a lot of those regulations out in Kansas, but might be different depending on where you're listening at. Or it could be small. You know, it could be I have a little pond in my backyard and I don't want anyone to keep big fish, or I don't want anyone to keep any fish. And all those are all okay as long as you understand the management implications. But that's kind of where, you know, a lot of this discussion of harvest came from in my mind.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. I think one of the things that's interesting, you're listening to how you think about this versus how I think about it. I'm not typically thinking about fishing regulations.
Yeah.
And you know, there's lots of stakeholders who participate in catch and release fishing.
Yeah.
And on the hunting side of things, we don't have catch and release hunting. Hunting, if you are engaged in hunting and if you're successful, then you harvest an animal.
Right.
We call the what would be catch and release, we call it wildlife viewing.
Or wildlife photography.
Right? Yeah. And so I think that's an interesting difference already for me between how you're thinking about this and how I would think about it.
Right. So, yeah. And that's, I think, what makes it so fun is, you know, every listener out there, everyone that's out hunting or fishing has a little bit different view of what's right and wrong, what's responsible. And I think that comes back to your point of, you know, responsible harvest, what does that look like? And so coming at the end of the day, there might not be one consensus, but there's just things to think about, right?
Yeah.
Make sure that we're kind of making those decisions that way. So, you know, over harvest or you know, is another example that could easily happen. And so, you know, bobwhite quail, right, come to mind. And so if you're out hunting, I love quail hunting. Watching the dogs work is probably just as much fun to me as harvesting a quail. But, you know, if you go out and harvest one quail or two quail out of a covey, that's probably okay. If you track down every single one of those quail and shoot them, I would imagine that's not very good for that quail population over time.
Yeah, definitely. And that kind of gets back to, you were talking about regulations when you were talking about harvest. And you know, that my first thought when somebody asked me how you go about harvesting in an ethical way, well, my first step is I'm going to follow the regulations,
yeah.
Right? And those regulations are set so that harvest can be sustainable. That's an important aspect of those regulations. But sometimes they can still be taken advantage of.
Sure.
Right? And so if we overexploit a local population or a group of quail in a covey, that's an example of how, even though we're following the regulations, even though nobody in our party takes more than the limit of quail, if we pursue that covey until they're all gone, then that may not be ethical because we're not leaving any for seed, so
yeah.
To speak, right?
You know, taking that another step, what if you don't know that taking all of them is a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
And so kind of your understanding of what's going on out there, I think plays into it as well. So, you know, ignorance is bliss, I guess, to some extent, and that's ignorance is also not an excuse for breaking the law. So
sure.
Still following those regulations are important, but, you know, if you're following the law and doing something with negative consequences that you don't necessarily know, that's, I don't know, you know, is that okay or not? That's for different people to kind of figure out.
It is for sure. And that's part of the evolution of the mindset of an outdoors person,
yeah.
Right? When we first get started, we might be so excited about, you know, having the opportunity to harvest an animal that we get caught up in the emotions and we do chase down a whole covey of quail, or we do go back to a pond too many times and overfish it or something
sure.
like that. But as most outdoors people mature and go through that process, they start thinking about, well, I went back to this place where I had a really good experience for a couple of times, and now there's nothing there. And maybe that's my fault.
Yeah. So, you know, thinking about ethical harvest, getting back to that a little bit, I think, you know, that kind of comes into it. And taking in animals in a way that respects the environment and respects that population is kind of how I would define that. You know, but what that topic is, I don't know. So going back a little bit to, let's talk about fair chase for a minute, right? I think that's a topic that comes up a lot. And so fair chase to me means giving that animal a fair, reasonable opportunity to escape my activities that day, right? So I don't want to go out and put a lot of sedatives in a pond that's going to make all the fish float to the top. I can go just pile them all up. I want that. Sure. I want to have to use 10 different colors of lures that day to be able to harvest a fish. And some days it's going to work and some days it's not. But I'm interested to see what you think. What's fair harvest mean to you?
Or well,
fair chase, not fair harvest, fair chase.
Yeah, I tend to, I don't know. My definition of that sort of thing might be a little broader than some folks. I know that there are groups who think that the only kind of harvest that's okay, and this is probably not thinking about fair chase so much as it is other things, but that only subsistence harvest is responsible. There are other folks who think that only traditional methods of pursuing animals are ethical. And so, you know, maybe a traditional archery hunter might be the only thing that's ethical. You know, one of the things that always gets to me is hunting with hounds, using dogs to assist humans in hunting is something that's been around for a really, really, really long time. As long as we've been domesticating wolves into dogs, we've been using them for things like hunting.
Sure.
So that's a very traditional form of hunting that some folks don't see as fair chase because the hound is doing the work for you. But there's a whole lot of effort that goes into training that dog, right? You know something about that.
Yeah.
We've got these knuckleheads that we have to train to do what we want them to do when we go out there. And I think that I draw the line where I'm thinking about technologies that the animal can't escape.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is definitely a role for the use of aircraft, in certain situations, but, you know, for most species that we're trying to manage sustainably, using aircraft to harvest them is not something that we're going to do from a harvest standpoint.
Sure.
You know, it's allowed for recreational hunting of feral swine, but feral swine are an introduced species that's incredibly damaging to our ecosystems. It's also a tool that's used in wildlife damage management. But I don't see a role for that from a recreational standpoint for most species.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that, you know, that line can get blurred, though, right? So, I mean, I would say that aircraft are probably on one extreme, but what about a crossbow during archery season, right? I mean, that's just kind of figuring out. Some people are going to be okay with that, and some people you talk to are going to say that's a firearm. It should only be used during firearm season. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can go all day about that. We can talk just about compound bows. Is that okay, or should they all be recurve? What do they need to be made out of? I mean, The line is there somewhere. It's just a matter of where that line is. One of the topics that comes up a lot in discussion with this kind of deal is, you know, what about a big fish or a big deer, or trophy fish? Is it okay to harvest that? And again, I mean, we're sharing our opinions today, which I think is part of the fun. But, you know, understanding what's going to happen if you harvest that animal, I think, is a big part of it. So, thinking about fish, if you go harvest the big fish that are in your pond, take all the big bass out, for example, it takes a really long time and a lot of effort to get a really big bass to thrive in a, especially in a smaller farm pond.
Yeah.
So if you go taking those out, and everyone wants to have their picture taken with it, and those are the ones you want to keep. But from a management side of things, if you're keeping those fish, your chances of catching another one like that are going to drop precipitously. So what you want to be doing most of the time is taking out small fish and harvesting those. But, you know, I don't, what about whitetail? Is that similar with whitetails?
Well, it depends on what your goals are.
Yeah.
I think one of the big differences between a farm pond and thinking about whitetail deer is that a farm pond is a closed system.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas, unless we're in a high fence, whitetail deer are in an open system. And so, that individual that you remove could have been on a lot of different properties, not just the one that you're hunting. There's also going to be immigration of other individuals from other areas, and there's probably overlapping territories of a bunch of individuals. And so the way I would think about white-tailed deer is that ethical harvest is going to be an animal that you can legally take where you are, because wildlife is a public trust, right? And they come and they go as they please. They belong to everyone. One of the challenges that I face sometimes with wildlife damage issues is, you know, folks want to say, you know, the state's deer, and they're mad at these deer that belong to wildlife and parks that are eating the crops on their property. The challenge with that is it's way, way more complex than that, right? Because those deer actually belong to the citizens of Kansas But Wildlife and Parks is the agency that's responsible for setting regulations and managing the regulations for harvest for that species. And so they're not the state's deer. They're everybody's deer. And so if you have the opportunity to take a young buck or an old buck, and you have a tag that is appropriate for that animal, then in my mind, that's an ethical harvest.
Sure.
And I think at some level, we get into this mindset where, especially if we're managing property and we've been watching this deer grow and we've been putting a whole lot of effort into managing so that maybe that deer is going to come to our property and we have lots of opportunity to harvest it, maybe opportunities to see it over multiple years and all those sorts of things, that investment of time and energy almost makes it feel like that's our deer. And so then we start thinking about other people affecting our opportunity to harvest animals. And so that shapes our views about what is ethical for that other person to do, when in all reality, they're following the laws. They are harvesting animals in a sustained way. They're doing it humanely and all those sorts of things. They're using the meat from the animal that they're harvesting, but their value system for what makes that deer an animal that they want to harvest is different from ours. And so it's easy to say, well, they're not ethical.
Yeah.
Right?
I think about, you know, my dad is almost 80 years old, and he goes out, and he grew up, he never really had a chance to harvest any bucks. And so he comes out and visits Kansas now, and he's happier than anything you could think of when he sees a little spike that he can harvest. And
yeah.
And to him, he's happy it's a buck, right? But he's also happy that he's filling the freezer, right? And so it doesn't matter how big they are. It's just as exciting to him. And I think, you know, you've brought up in the past that one of the things that we can artificially do is you know, degrade our hunting experience.
Yeah.
A little bit. That might not be the right word, but over time, if you always have to harvest a really big buck to have a good, successful hunt, eventually you're not going to enjoy it anymore because you can't one up, you know, there's a limit to how big a deer
sure.
can get. And so, you know, getting back to what is enjoyable, I went through that evolution. I think part of that's just, you know, growing as an outdoors person, but going through that evolution of, hey, it's not always about the harvest either. Maybe that's something we can talk about in a little bit, but if you do harvest an animal, all the opportunities, you know, learning how to prepare it, how to cook it, how to clean it, all that stuff can be a big part of the fun too. But I think figuring out, you know, where does a big buck or a small buck or a big fish or small fish fit into the harvest is just part of that fun conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the other thing too is sometimes we can actually, by promoting ways of harvest that might fit a certain value system about, well, it needs to be an 8-point buck,
yeah,
or something. If that turns into a regulation, then sometimes that can backfire. It's been shown by some good science that antler point restrictions can actually shift our population towards a population that is going to be smaller antler deer on average, and that's because it ends up sort of making it almost certain that you're going to remove the deer that have the potential to become really big bucks
sure.
before they get the age required to become big.
Yeah.
So, you know, that deer that could have been a 200-inch whitetail, you know, that there's not a person out there in the world that wouldn't want to see and have the opportunity to harvest if they're a hunter, that deer's probably going to get taken out when he's a 6.2-year-old. Right? Or an 8.3-year-old, because he's got that potential to become big. He's going to have some of those characteristics that we might use to set the regulations when he's young.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. The unintended consequences, I think, are always fascinating to me. And that's why as scientists, you know, we're continuing to learn, and that's why regulations change every year. Conditions change and information changes. And so try to do the best with that that we can. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, after we do kill an animal or harvest an animal, what that looks like, and how does that play into ethical or responsible harvest? So, you know, to me, it's obviously there's some simple things, you know, use the meat off the animal, but where does that blur the lines? What if you're out fur harvesting, right? I mean, again, the legalities maybe is an easy way to kind of cut what is ethical or what's responsible and what's not, but just interesting to think about.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, the way I would think about that is, I'm not going to harvest an animal that I don't have a use for.
Yeah.
That's part of the North American model for conservation, right? If we're going to kill an animal, then there needs to be a legitimate reason for that. If that's a fur bearing animal, then that means that I need to get that animal home, and deal with that animal in a time period where the fur is still going to have value,
yeah.
So that it's marketable, and that sort of thing. I'm not going to let it spoil. I try and, like with meat, if whether it's a fish or whether it's deer or whatever, I try and get them processed as quickly as I can so that that meat has the best value that it can at the table, so that folks enjoy it. So that's kind of the way I think about those things.
A lot
things.
Of people that say they don't like wild game or don't like fish, I think just have either not harvested the animal well or you know, whatever post-harvest technique, so they haven't gotten the meat off that animal fast enough. I think we tend to overcook it a lot because most of the wild animals have lower fat contents, and so it dries out. But you know, if you have an animal that you've taken and you know you have – taking the meat off of it relatively quickly, whether it's a fish or it's wildlife of some sort, it's some of the best food out there.
So yeah.
It's just learning how to prepare it a little bit.
For sure. What about kind of going along with that? One of the things that we need to think about after the harvest would be, how do you display that animal?
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the interesting things that I see is we have laws that do not allow folks to display carcasses after harvest in Kansas if that animal has not been processed, basically. So it's, for an example, sometimes folks want to hang up a dead coyote on a fence.
Yeah.
Or display a coyote carcass on the hood of a truck or something like that. That's illegal.
Yeah.
And I think it's for good reason. You know, there's a lot of folks who might be non-hunters who are very happy for hunting to exist. They understand the value of hunting. It's just not something that they do, but they may not want to see your dead coyote.
Right.
And the fact that they might be forced to see it might shift some of those folks into an anti-hunting sentiment, right? And so now, we've taken someone who saw the value in harvest and pushed them towards someone who might push back when there's an opportunity to push back on regulations about harvest or rights for hunting and fishing and those sorts of things.
You know, on the aquatic side, rough fish come to mind. And so gar, a good example, I think a really good example. So gar, you know, they have the most common type around here are long-nosed gar. They have really long snouts and their teeth just look gnarly. So they look like they're going to attack you. They look like they're going to eat a bunch of sport fish. And if you look at the diet analysis, really they're eating fish that compete with the sport fish. So they're eating other fish that you probably don't want to have a lot of in the reservoir or pond or river, wherever you're fishing. But, you know, I've seen all kinds of bad things happen to gar. A lot of people take them and just throw them on the bank and don't utilize them at all. So same types of things. And all that does is gives a negative taste to all the hunters and fishers out there that are trying to do it the ethical way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think we could take it a step beyond just the animals, too. We've talked quite a bit about that. But, you know, to me, ethical or responsible harvest also means treating the environment well, right? And so simple things like cleaning up your trash, taking everything out with you, but you know, also making sure are we managing some of that habitat the best we can, or are we giving back if we're going out to a public area? You know, are there little things that we can be doing in each of those areas? So, you know, I just think habitat management, respect for the environment is also an important part of it that might get lost in translation a little bit when we're focusing on the animals.
Yeah, definitely. Paying things forward, thinking about the future and not just yourself.
Yeah, all of us working together. There's lots of people that want to be out there, right?
So, yeah.
Taking kids out. So, you know, getting that next group of hunters or fishermen interested in being outdoors, I think is really important too.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely important.
You know, one of the things that comes up, this is really a lot in saltwater, where there's a lot of commercial fishing. And so for the most part, about 51%, and they're technical on that amount, of the harvest goes to commercial fishermen. So if we think about species like red snapper, grouper, and that's an oversimplification, but about half goes to commercial fishermen and about half goes to recreational fishermen. And so the idea comes up, you know, should more go to recreational fishermen or should more go to commercial fishermen? Balancing that, the commercial fishermen will say everyone should have the right to eat red snapper throughout the country and I should have a right to provide for my family. And the recreational fishermen will say I should be able to go out and have more fun and be able to catch more fish. So I don't know that there's really a right or wrong there, but one thing I do want to point out is that when most of these regulations, whether we're talking about commercial or recreational fishers or other regulations for hunting and fishing, that a lot of times that biologists are spending a ton of time, you know, looking at the data, figuring out what the numbers are telling them, managing habitats, trying to do the best job they can. And so there's something that goes into understanding that, you know, the biologists, there's reasons for what decisions are made.
Yeah.
Right? So
it kept, well, kind of along with that, you know, thinking about commercial fishing and that sort of thing, you know, one of the things that comes up sometimes is bycatch.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess I, when I'm thinking about that, thinking about using the right equipment, using humane equipment. Yeah. So we're not catching critters that we didn't intend to kill, but we're also humanely catching the critters that we do intend to harvest. Or maybe we're using a hunting caliber that's appropriate for the species that we're harvesting. It's not so big that it blows the critter apart and makes it unusable,
yep.
But it's also large enough and has enough energy to efficiently transfer into that animal to quickly kill it.
Yeah.
And one of the big criticisms of traps and snares by folks who don't necessarily know a lot about them is that they're just across the board inhumane. And you talked a little bit about how much time biologists have put into thinking about regulations and conducting studies to make sure that things are done appropriately. And that's one of the areas that a lot of people don't realize is there's an incredible amount of research done. It's called best management practices for harvest of fur bearers. That's testing traps to make sure that the traps that we're using are humane for the critters that we're catching, and that snares either humanely restrain an animal or very, very quickly kill them so that they're euthanized. They get a good death rather than being tortured and that sort of thing. So I think there's lots of different things that go into ethical harvest or responsible harvest beyond maybe some of the things that just immediately come to mind.
Yeah, and I think beyond just the biologist or the, you know, companies making all these things, making sure that you as a hunter or a fisherman are taking the time to understand your equipment and, you know, go practice shooting your bow, practice shooting your rifle, understand the hook size and how to properly put bait onto a hook to reduce, yeah, you know, the ability for it to kill those animals. So all that really goes into it as well.
Well, Joe, thanks for bringing this topic to us today. I've definitely enjoyed talking with you about my ideas for ethical harvest and hearing your ideas about ethical harvest. And hopefully our listeners have gotten a little bit of insight from it and maybe will spur some folks into thinking about what ethical harvest means to them too and try to do a good job of harvesting animals ethically. So that wraps up our episode for today, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with a terrestrial episode.
Fins, Fur, and Feathers is hosted by K-State Research and Extension and is part of the Natural Resources University Podcast Network.
The network and this podcast are supported by the Renewable Resources Extension Act.